Okay. So this Arab man turns to a rabbi and he says that he wants to convert to Judaism. So the rabbi says, if you cross this dangerous river and you survive, when you get to the other side, you'll be Jewish. So the father, this Muslim, on one side of the river, he swims across and he gets there safely. Then his wife swims across and she gets there safely. But their son, their 13-year-old son, he swims across and he doesn't make it. He gets eaten by a crocodile. So the mother is beside herself in hysterics. She's crying. The father says to her, why are you crying? It was only an Arab.
That's an awful joke.
All right, I take that back. I have some other conversion jokes that aren't there. So. Hello. This Wednesday is, this Tuesday night is coming, is going to be the Festival of Shavuot. And the Festival of Shavuot, in many respects, reflects the warm and strong connection that Judaism and high esteem that Judaism places converts who convert to Judaism. So, of course, we read the Megillat Rut, the story of Ruth, who was a convert, maybe the prototypal convert. And the reason we do that is because, in a sense, Shavuot is the anniversary of the day when we, as a people, the entire Jewish people, converted to Judaism. That's when we became Jewish. At Mount Sinai, at the first festival of Shavuot, we converted to Judaism. Ruth converts to Judaism. So therefore, and that's actually the model of conversion in many respects. And therefore, we read Megillat Rut, and we have that connection to conversion. As well, within Judaism, there are many commandments. I think there's 22 mentions in the Torah of the fact that you have to be especially sensitive to somebody who converted to Judaism. Famous Shammai and Avtalion, Rabbi Akiva, his student Rabbi Meir, all these Unkelus who translated the Torah into Aramaic, all of these are very famous historical converts or children, descendants of converts, and Judaism holds them in great and high esteem, especially since a convert has to give up so much in the process of converting to Judaism. A convert needs to, the Talmud says, Gershon is Gaya Kakotim Shinoila Dami, which means that a convert, person who converts to Judaism, is considered like a child, a newborn child. So in a sense, partly what that means is that they sever ties to their culture, to their religions that they were raised in, to their family. There's certain family ties that are severed. So you see that a convert is very much like, let's say, an orphan or a widow, and they often put together in the Torah that there has to be extra sensitivity to these categories of people because they're extremely vulnerable. People who are orphans, they don't have parents to support them, to look after them. People who are widows don't have husbands, and people who are converts don't have family structures as well to support them in the same way that Jewish people would have. And therefore, they are particularly vulnerable members of society, and we have to be extra careful in how we treat them. So there's a commandment in the Torah, we all know, v'ahavta l'reacha kamecha, that you have to love your fellow as yourself. And when it comes to a convert, there's an extra commandment to love the convert in addition to the general commandment to love a Jew. So it's double the obligation. In fact, there's a very interesting letter that Maimonides Maimonides, a convert wrote to Maimonides that he was having a halachic disagreement with his rabbi. And in as it got more and more heated, in a fit of anger, the rabbi said, well, you have no right to an opinion because you're a convert to Judaism. You're not born a Jew, so you don't have a right to discuss this halachic, to have an halachic opinion here. So he wrote to Maimonides, and Maimonides wrote back a very famous and very powerful letter. And the letter said, first of all, in relation to the halachic issue, you're right, your rabbi's wrong. That's just besides the point in time. But he said, but also I assume that your rabbi was drunk at the time, because he wouldn't have said that statement if he was in sound mind. And then Maimonides goes on to describe how incredibly important converts are within Judaism. And it's tied to the fact that they have to make sacrifice to come to Judaism. It's also connected to the fact that we don't proselytize. Judaism, unlike probably any other religion or most other religions, does not have an active campaign to bring non-Jews into the fold. That is not a Jew. In fact, on the contrary, if somebody approaches the Jewish community with the intent to convert, the first response, as far as the community is concerned, the first response of the converting body, the Beth Din, that's in charge of conversion, will be to discourage the candidate, to say, look, you don't need to be Jewish. You could, you know, I don't know if you've read any Jewish history books, but take a read of a Jewish history book. We're not so loved. It's not a nice thing. You don't want to be marginalized like us. And maybe really what you want to do is be a Noahide, which is they practice certain elements of Judaism without converting to Judaism and so on. And so they are gently but firmly rebuked and rejected, pushed away. And if they come back and they show a strong resolve to convert, only then does the process of conversion, which I'll describe momentarily, begin. So we discourage people. So a person who has come to Judaism and wants to be accepted in the fold of Judaism and is rejected, and in spite of that rejection continues to try and endeavors to belong to the Jewish faith, then that is a Jew by choice, and that is a very great thing and held in high esteem by Judaism. Okay? So that's one introduction. Perhaps another very important point to say by way of introduction is that Geirut, or conversion, is an avenue through which sincere Gentiles can be assimilated into Judaism. Not a way out for Jews to have a kosher stamp on dating freely and marrying Gentiles. Okay, and that's so what I'm...
Would you mind to repeat that?
Yes, so what I would like to repeat it so that I can get this clear. There is a mechanism in Judaism of introducing a convert to Judaism, absolutely, as I said before. And they are held in the highest of esteem within the Jewish community after they have completed their conversion process. However, conversion, Geirut, is a way for people to come into the Jewish nation. It was never intended, nor should it be, a way of making something kosher. It's like person said, that this person was deathly ill, and they needed to, and the doctor said that the only thing that could save his life is if he eats pork. There's something in pork, in a pig, that can save his life. So he was a religious Jew, and he didn't want to eat the pig without first having it shechted, without first having it slaughtered ritually in a proper way. So because by Jewish law, to save a life, you're allowed to eat, you're allowed to set aside most of the commandments of the Torah, including the commandment to eat kosher. So he put aside that commandment, but he didn't want to eat an animal that wasn't shechted properly, that wasn't slaughtered properly. So he went to the Seichet with his little piggy, and the Seichet shechted the pig and then checked the lungs, because when you, after you shecht an animal, you have to check the lungs of the animal to make sure that the animal had the ability to live for 12 months had it not been shechted. Otherwise it's considered a treif and it's not kosher. So the Seichet checked the lungs, and there was a question. There was a doubt as to whether the lungs were indeed healthy or not. And so they took the question to the rabbi, and they come in front of the rabbi and they show him the lungs, and the Seichet explains the thing. So the rabbi says, it's enough that you're eating pig. You wanted to have my stamp of approval also. Is that, it needs to be kosher, it needs to be defined as kosher. This rabbi says it's okay. You know, eat your pig if you have to eat it, but don't do it under rabbinical, with a stamp of kashrut. So it's the same type of thing. Gerut is a mechanism that when somebody sincerely wishes to convert and be a part of the Jewish people, it is there. And as I mentioned, historically, there have been great examples of unbelievable converts to Judaism. There was one convert very famous who died as a martyr for Judaism. His name was Avram ben Avram, Avram the son of Avram, because all converts are called child of Avram, and he took as his Hebrew name Avraham, so he was Avram ben Avraham. So, and when he died, Al Kiddush Hashem, he died in the sanctification of God's name because he was persecuted as a Jew. They said, like, in a way, he cheapened the value of every other Jew, because we used to consider it a big thing that a Jew gave up his life rather than compromise his religion. But here, this Avram ben Avram chose to be Jewish and then gave up his life. That's an even greater accomplishment. So, obviously, the mechanism is there, and Gentiles can use that mechanism to come into the Jewish people. However, it was never intended to be a stamp on a pig's lung. It's never intended to be, out there freely and date and marry Gentiles because you have that there. So that tension between those two ways of looking at conversion is going to explain a lot of the modern controversy that surrounds conversions. But before we get there, let's start with the process. So there is a process, there's a 4 or 5 step process to becoming a Jew. And it starts off with a step prior to the process. What's that? Moshe Feinstein says, the first thing is that a person wants to be Jewish. And that means that he wants to have a connection with the Torah, and he wants to, or she, wants to become a Jew based on the Torah, the acceptance of the Torah, and because and how the Torah dictates a person becomes a Jew. That is the first prerequisite, if you will, the preamble to the whole thing. Then comes step number one. Step number one is Hoidas HaMitzvahs, it's called. You inform the potential convert about some fundamental concepts in Judaism. I'll go a little bit more into that in a moment. But he or she needs an overview, a summary of what Judaism is. You know, before you buy, you take the car for a test drive, you figure out what the features are and if that's worth it for you. So you got to know what you're buying. And then, like a kind of a second step in that first step, a 1B, if you will, is Kabbalas HaMitzvahs, that the person accepts all of the 613 commandments and rabbinical injunctions that apply to Judaism, and that is done in a formal statement. You can't just you have to make a statement to that degree. So learning a little bit about what Judaism is all about and then making a formal statement that this is something that you accept. That's step one. Step two, if you, to about 50% of people who convert, this applies, and that is circumcision. Yeah. The other 50% doesn't. Don't have to. There's special exemptions if you're female. Then the third step is you have to immerse yourself in a mikveh, in a ritual pool of water with very specific dimensions, and then when the person comes out of the mikveh, they have to state in front of a beis din, in front of a court of three judges, a Jewish court, that they are willing to accept the
scriptures of the Torah. The beis din has to witness them going into the mikveh, don't they?
They have to witness them going into the mikveh, yes.
And
witness them having a bris.
How do they witness them if it's a female going to the mikveh?
If it's a female, then the female goes into the mikveh first with a female attendant till she's totally submersed in the water. And the men come in a way where they cannot, they stand like on the side. They have to be in the same room, but they stand in a way where it's not, where there's no visible, where they can't see the woman. In the times of the temple, there was another step. You had to bring a special sacrifice. That step also does not exist today. Although there's some question if a convert should put aside money
for that. Action.
What's that?
You can make a donation.
You can make a donation. Always make a donation. never stop that. All right. So now let me propose the following question. How sincere does a convert have to be? Because I said, you know, step 1B was Kabbalah HaMitzvahs, that they have to be willing to accept Jewish life on themselves. 613 mitzvot, 613 commandments, and the rabbinical injunctions in addition to that, and all of the things. So how sincere does that have to be? Which means, let's say that you have a convert who is converting to Judaism, and they say, I like everything except eating matzah on Pesach, because matzah on Pesach really gives me constipation. Everything about Judaism is beautiful except no matzah on Pesach. Or, as I once actually had a very interesting case, when I was in Canada, a member of my community called me up in a panic. His daughter had met a young man, and while the young man's maternal grandmother was Jewish, she was very interesting actually. She was she fled Europe to escape the Holocaust, and then she went to Lebanon, and in Lebanon they became her father, to hide the fact that they were Jewish, adopted became a Christian. So and then brought up his daughter as a Christian, who brought up her daughter as a Christian, who had this young man as her son, who now wanted to marry the daughter of this member of my congregation. So I told him, well, the good news is he's as Jewish as me and you and Moses. If your mother is Jewish, by Jewish law, you are Jewish, and his mother was Jewish, and her mother was Jewish. However, he was not circumcised. And I spoke to some colleagues, and he was very interested in her religion, our religion, Judaism. And he went to classes, some of my classes, and my colleague said that there's something called Giul Lechumra, which means that you don't have to technically convert, but because there could be some question as to your Jewish status, people convert as a matter of stringency. So it's a very simple process, except for the circumcision part. That's less simple, at least in this case it was as simple. He did not want to have a circumcision. So he was like, I'm willing to embrace Judaism 100%, except I'm not willing to, I just have certain things I'm not willing to. He wanted to take a shortcut, but I'm not taking a shortcut. All right, I will not give up my day job. Do not worry. Don't panic. So, I'll quote from the Rambam, Maimonides. Maimonides says that when a person comes to convert to Judaism, you inform him or her of the fundamental concepts of our religion, which are Yichud Hashem, or the oneness of God. So you say that basically the idea that God is everywhere and everything. And the prohibition regarding idol worship, that you're not allowed to bow down to a statue. And you expand at great length on this matter, says Maimonides. So when it comes to this, you go on and on, which rabbis are good at that, so that's easy. Then you inform her of some of the easier commandments, the lesser stringent commandments, and also some of the more difficult ones. But you don't expand on that, so you just give them a very brief overview, because obviously, learning Judaism is a lifelong endeavor, and you never get there, right? You never can. It is an impossibility for an average person to learn and master every part of Torah knowledge and wisdom. It's just too vast for one person to do in one lifetime. So it's, especially if you're on Facebook, and that takes up a lot of time as well. So it's very, you know, we have distractions, it's very difficult. So what do we do? You just give an overview. But the person has to know what they're getting into, as I said before. Try before you buy. The Nemuka Yosef, who was a Spanish codifier of Jewish law, commentator on the Talmud, he says, lived in the 1400s, he says that failure to inform a person about the commandments doesn't invalidate a conversion. So in other words, if you didn't know, and there's a fascinating case in the Talmud where the Talmud says that there was this person who converted to Judaism, went through the process, but ended up living in a Gentile neighborhood. So didn't live with Jews. And for many, many years, this person did not know that you had to keep Shabbat. And they didn't know that it was forbidden by Jewish law to bow down to idols. So they bow down to idols and they didn't observe the Shabbat. So the question was, is this, how many sacrifices do they have to bring? That's what the Talmud is speaking, because in temple times, if a person did a sin by accident meaning you didn't know it was a sin, you had to bring a certain sacrifice called the Korban Chatos. You brought a sacrifice that was for unintentional sinning, and this person sinned unintentionally, so they had to bring the sacrifice. So the question was, how many of these sacrifices, because let's say they lived for a year, you know, they broke 54 Shabbos per year, how many sacrifices would they have to bring? And they bowed down to an idol, how many sacrifices would they have to bring? And the Talmud is really concerned over there, is it one long forgetting, that they just had a fit of forgetfulness, only being one sacrifice, or is each independent time that they broke Shabbat require its own sacrifice? Anyway, that's what the Talmud over there is. But it's a fascinating Talmud, because if you think about it, the fact that the person has to bring the sacrifice shows that they were Jewish. Only a Jew has to bring a sacrifice if they don't keep Shabbat. A Gentile does not have an obligation by Jewish law to keep Shabbat. There would be no sacrifice. So therefore, this person who brought the sacrifice is Jewish all throughout those years that he or she lived in a Gentile environment. And they were ignorant of Judaism, of some of the main tenets of Judaism, to the point that they were ignorant of even the fact that you are required to keep Shabbat and not to serve idols. And yet, the conversion was valid to the point that they were considered Jewish. So you don't have to know everything about Judaism. I don't know everything about Judaism. I consider myself a Shabbat observant Jew, but statistically, mathematically, because it's so complicated to observe Shabbat properly, I probably, out of ignorance, am not keeping Shabbat to the highest level. But that is, people who are constantly learning and constantly trying to keep their knowledge current. So obviously, when somebody wants to become Jewish, we assume that they don't know everything, and that's fine. So how could there be a requirement of Kabbalah Shemitzis, that they have to accept upon themselves the command? You see, there's a paradox here. There's a contradiction. Either or. Either, yes, I accept all of the commandments. Do you know what all the commandments are? No. So then how can you accept it? So what's the...
Not even Islam.
It's the same way that we accepted the Torah at Mount Sinai, the festival of Shavuot again. We accepted the Torah also sight unseen. God said, do you want the Torah? We didn't say what was in it. We said we will do, we'll observe, and then we'll learn. But first we'll do. In other words, we took it sight unseen. So my question to you is, what is the convert have to know to be able to say, I'm willing to be a Jew? Don't all speak at once.
Flesh is possible for me, because otherwise
As little as possible.
But ignorance is no excuse.
Ignorance is bliss, and ignorance is no excuse.
The best English is rebuild your benefit of life.
Anybody else got any ideas?
They probably need to know that they're doing it not for the wrong reasons. So, I don't know if I missed something in the class.
It's what?
They're sort of doing it with the right sort of intentions, where that's probably all they'd be expected to know. Just know what their actual goal for it is.
Yes. Yeah. In other words, basically what they're saying is, in principle, we agree that whatever the Torah says, we'll try and keep that, in principle. But we don't know. So you don't have to know, as you can see from that Talmudic passage that I just quoted, you don't have to know everything about Judaism, but you have to have like a general attitude that I'm willing to take whatever they throw at me. Right? That's what it is. Kind of like, I guess, if you start a job and it's a new job and you don't know all that's going to be required of you in the job. Obviously, you have some idea, but you come and you say, you know, from 9 to 5, I'm willing to do what the job dictates, even though I don't know all the rules.
Well, aren't there like certain modules? Is that something that's always been there historically, where someone who's doing the conversion process has to cover off at least certain topics as a starting?
There are certain topics, yes. So Maimonides that I quoted before said clearly that they have to know the mitzvah, the commandment of Yichud Hashem, the concept of God's oneness or unity, which means that God is everything. They have to understand that you're not allowed to serve idols. In other words, there's nothing separate, because an idol means something that's separate from godliness. And basically that is encapsulated in Hasidic philosophy. So they have to learn Hasidic philosophy or Kabbalah. So like Madonna is like halfway there, because she got that part of it. And then, if she did. And then the second thing is you teach them some mitzvot. So, you know, you would say Shabbat. There's a thing called Shabbat, and there's a, you know, something called Shatnez, which is you don't mix wool and linen, so that's like a lesser known or different mitzvot that you would teach them. Eating cheesecake on Shavuot would be an important mitzvot.
But nowadays we're obviously much more strict in our teaching requirements for prospective converts.
No, to teach a person the base, first of all, to teach the person what they need to know in terms of Hasidic philosophy, plus some basic things, how to keep Shabbat, how to keep a kosher kitchen, how to observe the various festivals, if it's a man, how to put on tefillin. All of these things, I think, you know, that's a couple of years study there.
At least.
That's a curriculum.
And that 3 times rejected and eventually accepted.
And then they accepted.
Really, we are making sure that they really want to give it.
Correct.
Isn't the Rambam contradicting the Gemara, though, when he says you have to teach them that idol worship is forbidden?
No, because he says you teach them that idol worship is forbidden.
Yeah, because we see from the Gemara.
Yes, so the Maimonides says you have to teach them that idol worship is forbidden. Somehow in that case they didn't, which shows that if you don't, this is not a hard and fast rule, this is just kind of a recommendation, because here in the Talmud they did not teach him, obviously, or her, that you cannot serve idols, and yet that person was accepted as a Jew. There is the Minchas Elazar says that you should teach the person to read Shema, so they should know how to read Hebrew, and so that to the point that they can read the Shema and some of the prayers, because right after they convert, they would be required to pray. So you need to, like, you know, so you need to kind of teach them things that they're going to need to know how to function as a Jew, because we have another prohibition. That prohibition is you're not allowed to place a stumbling block before the blind, and we've discussed it at this forum before, that a stumbling block before the blind doesn't mean, you know, if some guy's coming with his cane and you stick out your foot and you trip him, you know, that is also forbidden under this rubric, but it's somebody who is intellectually blind. In other words, they're blind because they don't have some knowledge, so they're blindsided. You cannot trip somebody up if they don't have knowledge. So if you're going to convert a person and they don't have the proper knowledge to be Jewish, then they're going to become Jewish technically, and they're going to not be practicing Jews. Well, as a Gentile they were very holy, and now you've turned them into very very unholy Jews.
Well, by the same token, if you know that after someone's converted, they're not going to keep certain mitzvahs, you're putting them in that same...
Okay, if you know that after somebody converts, good point, that after somebody converts, they're not going to keep certain commandments, that could be, because remember, the first step, what I said before, Kabbalah sa mitzvahs, means they are willing in theory, like in principle, to accept upon themselves all of the commandments of the Torah. Now, if they tell you specifically that they are not going to accept one commandment, this is problematic. I'll tell you a case, a fascinating case where this happened. There was a rabbi Hoffman. He's quoted in the Tzitz Eliezer. And this Rabbi Hoffman had an interesting case. Here's the case. There was a person in his community who was a Kohen. Now, a Kohen is not allowed to marry a convert. So this Kohen had a friend who was a non-Jewish woman, a Gentile woman, and they couldn't get married by Jewish law because she couldn't convert. So Hoffman said, what is worse, for a Kohen to be married to a convert, which is not allowed by Jewish law, or for a Kohen, or any Jew for that matter, to be married out of the faith, to be married to a Gentile? And he said, this is one opinion, he said that it's more important, it's better off, the Kohen is better off being married to a convert than being married to a Gentile, or living with a Gentile. So he converted this woman and officiated at the wedding of this Kohen to this convert in a way like to save the, sort of quote unquote, to save the Kohen from a worse sin in the grand scheme of things. Now that is one opinion. I can tell you that it's a lone opinion. Many, many, many other codifiers of Jewish law take the diametric, do not agree with Rabbi Hoffman's...
Doesn't that have an impact on status of children? Or is it
yes, so Rabbi Hoffman says also, not only that, you're not only fixing, so to speak, takanto, he calls it, you're not only fixing the Kohen, the husband, in that you're taking away a more grave sin, if you will, from him, but you're also fixing his children, because now his children are going to be Jewish.
But they're not going to be Kohanim.
They're not going to be Kohanim, that's fine, but I mean...
At least they're Jewish.
At least they're Jewish, right. Yes, they're not Kohanim, but at least they're Jewish. So Hoffman says, you know, that's got to be taken into consideration also. But Hoffman also says, and this is what the point I wanted to get to, well, first of all, just a very interesting sidebar, and this, to answer your question, of what if a person decides not to keep one commandment? She decided not to keep one. The whole conversion
that's
is
not,
based on the premise.
It's commandment. It's his.
It's his commandment that he's not allowed to marry a convert, but she has to support him in that commandment. The fact that she is marrying him shows that she does not accept that commandment, or lifnei iver. She's placing a stumbling block in front of the blind, and she's willing to do it in that case. So therefore, clearly, she's accepting Judaism with less than 100% acceptance of the totality of Judaism, because there's clearly one commandment that she's not supporting. Very interestingly, though, and this does have broad application, Rabbi Hoffman said, you must, only on the proviso, that you teach them and make sure that they keep the laws of Nida. The laws of Nida govern how a husband and wife are allowed to be, or when a husband and wife are allowed to be intimate with each other. And the laws of Nida are very severe laws. It's equal, it's equated in the Torah, in terms of the punishment, is equal to eating on Yom Kippur or to eating chametz on Pesach. It's the same severity if a person is intimate with a woman who is in a status of nida, she didn't go to a mikveh, that ritual pool, to change her status, then it is considered a very severe sin. So, but the laws of nida only apply to a Jewish man and a Jewish woman. they don't apply to a Jewish man and a Gentile woman. Again, there's other problems, but this problem isn't there. Now, if you're going to convert the woman to help to save this Kohen from a worse sin, you've got to make sure, and Rav Hoffman made sure, that she was would keep mikveh, that she would go regularly to the mikveh, in order to make sure that they were only intimate when she did not have the status of a nida. Because if you're really trying to save him, you don't want to make it worse for him, in a sense, and make him... which now is a segue into a very difficult question. And that question is, I said you have to have pure motives. I said that if a person comes to Judaism, we actually try and reject them up to three times, to dissuade them from converting to Judaism. And if the person insists that they still want to convert to Judaism, that is a sign that they are sincere. Now, what happens if the reason the person wants to marry
is to marry
a Jew. Let's say there's this guy has a lot of things going for him, a nice Yiddish aboychik, and a Gentile woman wants to marry him, but his family say, no, I'll only let you marry, you can marry only if you convert. So then she goes through the process of conversion. But why is she doing it? Because she wants to sincerely be a Jewess, because all her life she's felt something's missing and Judaism fills that void? No, she wants his money. That's why she's marrying him, or whatever the attraction is, right? So obviously that's not sincere motives. If that's not sincere motives, then it's not Kabbalah Samitzvah. It's not a proper acceptance of all the commandments because that's what God wants. Now, many, many people, it seems today, convert to Judaism because they want to marry Jews. Let me just put this in a historical context. Historically, Jews have been persecuted through most of our history. And it's been very rare that a person actively sought or by choice chose to be a Jew. So conversion was extremely rare. But we live in Western cultures today, in a society where Jews are accepted, we have all the freedoms, we enjoy all the freedoms that anyone else does in the societies that we live. And so we are interacting more with Gentiles than we ever have in history because we're not persecuted and ostracized. We are, so there's more interaction, which creates obviously assimilation, etc., etc. But there's also if a person converts to Judaism, that's not a death sentence like it was in other periods in history. So people can do it and can do it safely. Also, we now have a state, the State of Israel, which has a law called the Law of Return, which says that if you're Jewish, you can very easily immigrate to Israel. And a lot of people from Russia, etc., different the former Soviet Union, claimed that they're Jewish because not because they care, about Talmudic argumentation or something. The Koreans convert for that reason. But the reason that they're converting is because they want to get Israeli citizenship and participate in the economic miracle that is Israel. So, you're Jewish? Yes, I'm Jewish. Why not? He just answered a question with a question. That would be a sign that they're Jewish right there. But, obviously, you want to... how do we know today that a person is sincere? Especially, let me tell you, I've sat on a Beth Din that did conversions. And the couples, and I say that because I think they were all couples, every case, I had about 100 cases in my history with the Beth Din over there, and I think there were all, maybe one, I can remember one who was a single woman who came, but all the rest were couples. And they're all couples, they're coming, and one's Jewish and one's not. And they're sitting there, and the non-Jewish person wants to convert. So how do you go and determine purity of motive? So what do you think would be...
Interview them.
You interview them. What are you looking for? So they say, you interview them, let me tell you what the interview looks like. They're holding hands, they're kissing and hugging and everything.
These are all bad signs.
What's that?
These are all bad signs. If they're just so in love, they think they're doing it for the reason or they love each other, it's not the real reason that they want to be Jewish as such.
Okay, so is that grounds for rejecting them?
You can't marry. Do you still want to be Jewish?
Is that an awkward question?
Do you have to say that?
Well, is that an awkward question of maybe how you interpret purity of motive, and maybe there's a decision of whether to look at that differently these days than you may previously have.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's important to look at the fact that the Jewish part of the couple finds their Judaism important enough to say, I won't marry this person unless they're Jewish.
Right.
And to think about the consequences. I mean, I didn't like your Hoffman example, but at the same time, think about the consequences of if you don't accept.
Yes, so that is definitely is factored into the Jewish thinking on it, that the consequences of being strict and applying the strict... Okay, so first of all, even before then, there's a principle in Jewish law called Dvarim Shebelev Einam Dvarim, which means Jewish law cannot read minds. You don't have to read minds. We look at actions, we look at behavior, we look at even statements, testimony, etc. That's how Jewish law works. We don't think of motive. There is no concept of motive in strict halakha, in Jewish law. Obviously, your intention, why you do things on a spiritual level is very important, but in a legal court, in a Jewish court of law, your intentions are irrelevant. The main thing that counts is behavior and what you say, etc. So if somebody comes and says, you say, are you sincere? And they say, yes. By Jewish law, that's good. You don't have to try and guess what's in a person's heart. That's for God and that person to worry about. So that's number one, and that sets the tone for this. So you cannot, if a person comes and says, listen, I'm really sincere. The fact that we love each other is just because, what, if I convert, I'm not allowed to have a partner? Of course you are. If you convert, you're allowed to get married, and you're allowed to marry a Jew. This is my partner. This is the person who feels my soulmate, I'm going through my life journey with. And yeah, if that person was or wasn't in my life, I would still convert to Judaism because this is something that has meaning to me. You know, when I tasted his mother's chicken soup, I fell in love with Judaism. And since then, I've wanted to be a Jew. And, so even if he wasn't in my life, God forbid, I would still convert. In such a case, we can take that statement at face value because, in a sense, that we don't have to worry about what's their inner intent.
What if he admits that he's not interested? The Jewish partner.
That he's not interested in?
He admits this.
This is a big problem because, very good question. So the couple is sitting in front of the Beth Din and they're in their first interview and she says, this all speaks to me, I love it, why wasn't I born Jewish, I should have been born Jewish. And I want to embrace this fully. And he says, I don't. I am born Jewish, but I've never been observant. I don't want to embrace this. I'm not as religious as she is. So what do you do in such a case? You know that famous joke where the guy, where he wants to marry a non-Jew, so his father says, you can't marry a non-Jew, we're Jewish, you have to marry somebody Jewish, so he says, fine. He goes and he tells her that, and she says, I'll convert. She converts and she becomes very religious, much more observant than him. And she's keeping the Shabbat, and she's keeping kosher to the highest thing, and she's crimping his style. So he comes running to his father, and he says, Dad, she's too observant. I don't know what to do. He said, I told you not to marry a Gentile. The thing is, the point is that... So that's number one. Number two is what you said. What are the alternatives? If you don't convert the person, so then they're a couple who it's an interfaith marriage. And that is by Judaism considered one of the greatest tragedies within Judaism, both for the Gentile and for the Jew. It's a very tragic spiritually and even emotionally and psychologically a very tragic circumstance in most cases. So better, let's say, that she converts with perhaps insincere motives, or he converts with insincere motives, but at least we have, they are going to end up as two Jewish people married to each other.
But I think that's, the first thing you said is part of the problem, in the sense that I don't think you want to go to this interview and say, why are you converting, or say whatever, because then you're creating something where people know they have to come and lie to the rabbi, and everybody knows what's going on, but as long as they say the right thing, nobody's going to ask a question.
Have you ever tried to lie to a rabbi? It's a hard thing to do. Three of them. No.
I know cases where people have been told.
Of course.
That, I mean, there's cases particularly when people are adopting children and want their children to convert, and they have to tell the rabbis that they're, you know, they're Orthodox, or they keep the mitzvot so that their children can convert. And there's, you know, there's a lot of cases of where people have been told, well, you're only going to get your permission on this if you lie to the rabbis. And so I think part of it maybe is, what questions do you ask to try and help somebody, you know?
There are mechanisms in place. Now, I don't know what the reality here is in Australia, because I just don't know. I haven't. But I can tell you how we did it in Montreal. In Montreal, the average, let's say, conversion from that first meeting till when the person would go to the mikveh would be about 2 years, 2.5 years. And in that time of 2.5 years, there was a very well-defined curriculum of study. And it was presented, we put a lot of thought and effort into presenting it in a way that would make a lot of sense to anybody listening to it. So that was, we hope, was very inspirational and logical to people, that it's a good life to live, and you can understand that intellectually, not just as a matter of faith. There was monthly or bi-monthly meetings with the three rabbis that were in which all sorts of things were discussed, including they had to show us how they had made arrangements not to work on Shabbat, how they had koshered their home. We were involved with that, so we knew all of that was in place. Then we insisted that they have a sponsoring rabbi who we contacted, and the rabbi had to say that in most weeks that the person was in shul, in the synagogue, on the Shabbat and participating like that. They had to have a sponsoring family that they spent most Shabbat dinners there and Yontif dinners with the sponsoring family. So there was a mechanism, there was a structure in place. And then they went to the mikveh, and we still withheld giving them a certificate that they were converted for 1 year after that. So we followed the family for an additional year after they converted and got married, if that happened, before they, so, and they had to, we had a 3-month cool-off period, which is halachically mandated, which means that they had to live in separate homes, separate places, for a period of 3 months prior to the conversion, at least. So, you know, there were different issues over there to try, and all these things, again, are behavioral things, but they show sincerity. Somebody goes through all of that. Now, we tried not to be harsh, or it was a very gentle program, and we were very careful about people's feelings, and that we were dealing with human beings, but there was also a curriculum, a structured, well-structured curriculum that people went through. Did we get it always right? I think, you know, the people that came out were observant. I mean, they were observant, excited to be observant Jews. Both sides, the Jewish partner also in most cases became a lot closer to their Judaism than the non-Jewish. Now, there's another thing as well, also brought down in Halakha, that if a couple have been intimate, if they've had intercourse, then there's no more attraction. The attraction has subsides. Anymore. So in many cases that is used as a heter or a leniency to allow people to get married to convert, even if it's clearly because they want to get married, because we say, well, they got what they needed out of it, and now the fact that they still want to go ahead with it is more sincere. That is brought down in Jewish law. Well, Jewish law is comical sometimes, I don't know. What about a person who reverts back to their old ways? Let's say a person who said we're going to accept all the laws of Torah, they convert, and then something happens years down the road, and they are no longer keeping their commandments. Now, let me tell you, I am trying in the process of becoming an Australian citizen, right? Well, permanent resident, then citizen. And obviously, it's a process. Now, some of you were born here in Australia, I'm assuming, and nothing. You could be the biggest criminal in the world. You're going to be an Australian citizen, and you can never lose that citizenship. Me, I have to go through a very rigorous process. They look at if I'm a criminal, if I have a criminal past, and if they speak to my mother, I'm in big trouble on that score. They look at me to see that I'm healthy, that that I have a way of supporting myself and my family. I mean, there's all criteria that you have to go through to become a naturalized citizen of any state or country. But, you know, my daughter was born here. She didn't do anything. She could be unhealthy, God forbid. She doesn't earn any money. She's a total, I mean, you know, she hasn't earned a penny in her life. And she's been around already for 5 weeks, so it's like there's really, that's a problem. She's, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning when she's screaming and keeping us up, I would consider that criminal behavior. And nonetheless, she's an Aussie. She's an Australian citizen. So it's a similar thing with Judaism. A person who's born a Jew can never lose that right. You're born a Jew, no matter what you do, no matter how you behave, you could convert 100 times to Catholicism and you're still, technically as far as Judaism is concerned, you're still considered a Jew. However, if somebody converts, it's a process, as we've described, and once they have converted, then there is a possibility that they can give up their Judaism and go back, and that is a possibility that is discussed from the Talmudic times all till contemporary times. And then there's some discussion of how much of Judaism do you have to give up. Let's say you just don't want to eat matzah because you really have a problem with matzah on Pesach, but everything else you keep fully, like you're a great tzaddik, righteous person. Is that considered good? And there's much discussion and so on about that. I think we ran out of time. So are there any questions, concerns, criticisms?
So with the couple that you know they're not going to keep Taz and Mishpacha, for example, then you have the problem of Lifnei Iver, don't you? Because it's more serious for him.
Yes.
Or for both of them.
Yes.
After converting them before.
Yes. So the question was, if you know that the family aren't going to keep, it really applies to everything. If you know, let's say, that they're not going to keep Pesach, right, for some reason, then by converting, you know, a Gentile doesn't have to keep Pesach. So by converting them, you are now, you know, and so they were not going to fast on Yom Kippur. So a Gentile doesn't fast on Yom Kippur, nothing wrong with that. So it can be the greatest.
Yeah, but with Taras and Mishpacha,
Mother Teresa didn't even fast.
Make it more serious, because Pesach, if he doesn't keep it, he wasn't going to keep it anyway, right?
Right.
Whereas with Taras and Mishpacha, if she wasn't going to
keep it. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it is. And that's why you have to be very, we took a lot of care to make sure in Montreal that they were going to keep these laws of mikvah and the laws that govern the relationship between, the intimate relationship between a husband and a wife. That was very, we taught that more, we discussed it more, and we had some probing questions in that area that were probably a bit invasive but necessary. But we explained to people why, and everybody understood the process, so they understood the thing. All right, I was going to get into reform and liberal conversions and all that and the controversy, but I think we've run out of time, thank God. Any other further quick questions? So next week there's obviously no class because it is Shavuot, so I wish you a Chag Sameach. everybody, have a wonderful festival, and make sure that you listen to the Ten Commandments being read on Wednesday morning. Very important to be in shul, men, women, and children, to hear the Ten Commandments being read. And the week after that, we're back, and the topic is, where have all the Jews gone? So why you know, does it seem that Jews are not attending synagogue like they used to 30, 40, 50 years ago, and not being involved in communal life, etc. So that's what we're going to be discussing in 2 weeks. Have a wonderful Yom Tov. Anyone who has bench, certainly...